You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. Well, South Dakota has fallen once again to the bottom of the pile when it comes to national averages for teacher pay. The Blue Ribbon Task Force was convened under Governor Dugard's administration. Its co-chairs were State Senator Deb Soholt and State Representative Jacqueline Sly. So today we're going to look back at the original work of that task force and talk about how things have evolved over time and some possible ideas for what might happen next. Deb Soholt is joining me in the Kirby Family Studio in SDPB's Sioux Falls space. Nice to see you in person.
So good to see you. Thanks for having
us.
Nice
to see our vaccinated selves being able to
be back with real people. Real people, real energy. We love it.
We may go long, people. That's all there is to it. And Jacqueline Sly is joining us from the Black Hill Studio, the Black Hill Surgical Hospital Studio inside SDPB's Rapid City Studio. Jacqueline, all good on your end?
We're sitting here. I'm sitting here with my assistant making sure that I'm my voice is good, and we are ready to go.
So we have people from across the state making this wonderful connection work. And Deb, shout out to those healthcare providers who helped bring us all back together again, too. I know that's close to your heart.
Oh, wow. As a registered nurse, I'm just like in awe. Doctors, nurses, all the support people, you know, they put themselves on the line every day. So it's really great that we're moving into the other side.
Yeah, and so did teachers.
And so did teachers. If we ever understood the importance of teachers, the pandemic taught us a lot when everyone needed to go home and the parents would take the accountability for that learning.
Yeah. I almost feel like I could walk out of the studio right now and let you two give us a history lesson and some insight. So I'm going to ask you where you want to start. I'm hoping you can give us some background on the Blue Ribbon Task Force during Governor Dugard's administration. What are some of the things it was set to address and how were those conversations unfolding? Is that a good place to start, do you think?
I think that'd be great.
Yes, I do too.
Who wants to go first?
Well, why don't I just kick it off?
Thank you.
And then we'll turn it over to Jackie. You know, Governor Dugard just really had a vision of, you know, we'd always been last in teacher pay. There was a lot of discontent around the state of South Dakota. And Governor Dugard just really had a vision of it's time to course correct one of our primary obligations to our people. And so when we're a really conservative state, you know, to really start to think creatively and innovatively around a large public obligation, which ends up being about 45% to 48% when you add higher ed into it of the state budget, a lot goes into education in K-12. And then also the importance of our children and what does it mean for future growth within the state, workforce development, having a healthy population that are highly educated. So he really tasked us. We were tapped on the shoulder. Jackie was chairing the House Education Committee, and I was chairing the Senate Education Committee. And one of the things that we really felt strongly about was that so many people, you know, all of us have been to school, so we have a lot of opinions about what it means to fiddle with education. So one of the things that was important to Jackie and I is that we would listen to the people first. We knew there was a lot of emotion about education, and we wanted to get that clearly out on the table. So we did 18 public forums across the state of South Dakota just to listen to what people were thinking, administrators, teachers, the public. And we summed that all up into a qualitative report, which was really the good, the bad, the ugly of where everyone was at. But what we really understood was the public will to do something bold. Mm. And that then was the foundation upon which we got together with a large task force that represented multiple constituencies to roll up our sleeves and really do the quantitative work that led to then to the statutory effort. And so I'll let Jackie pick that up, too, about what we learned about teachers at that time.
I think as we went to the listening sessions and heard people present to us some of the data, too, that we found that it was really a larger issue than just teacher compensation. We found that there's were a lot of changes that had been made to the original formula that was in place for the past 20 years. It started out as a lump sum of dollars. We had this many students, and here we go. And then we found out that over the time period that it was in place, there had been changes made through the legislature to address some of the things that weren't part of that formula. But what happened then was that there got to be a lot of inequities, a lot of areas where some schools were receiving great amount of dollars for their students and others not so much. And so we decided to tackle that too, along with how do we retain and recruit teachers. That became part of the conversation, and also innovation within our schools of how we can utilize those tax dollars to make them go as far as they can.
Yeah. So recommendations, and how did we move forward from that intensive work of the task force?
Well, it really culminated in three major bills that came into the legislature. One was we had a lot of public will. We were working with chambers of commerce to actually do a tax increase to try to fund something new. Mm-hmm. We knew that we could only tweak if we were trying to do inflationary increases or just slight percentage increases into the general funding, that we needed money that would be ongoing every year, that we were going to lift the base up. And part of lifting that base then was directing that to teacher salaries. So a major bill was House Bill 1182, and that really had to do with what are we going to do to raise the tax, which was really a difficult lift to get through the legislature, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And so 63% of that monies that we came out of 1182, 63% of that half penny sales tax increase was going into lifting the base of general funding for education. And of that 63%, 85% needed to go into teacher salaries. Then additionally, we had 34% of that to reduce property taxes. And some of that was part of the give to get. And so it's a, you know, it's the grand form of negotiation. Mm-hmm. And then 3% went into this increasing the salaries of technical school instructors. So that was a major bill. Then we also had Senate Bill 131, and that was the bill that really defined all the provisions of where that increased tax money would go. And that had a lot to do with caps on general fund reserves, on limiting capital outlay growth. We had a lot of economic things that we were taking into consideration. And an old pension levy, which was a separate mill levy, that we just really cease and desist on that one and put mm-hmm. that into the general fund levy because we didn't need to have this small levy hanging out there. Then we also had Senate Bill 133, which was the development of statewide programs. And this expanded the e-learning center. We put $1 million into the e-learning center at Northern, a shared teacher mentoring program, shared services between the school districts, innovation grants for the school districts, and reciprocity for teachers coming in from other states. The thing that happened with this is this was all an interwoven package. Mm-hmm. So we were really consistent along the way to say, you can't start peeling off one thing from another, because how this all works together is this kind of complex matrix on how we start to move forward with respect to funding our teachers and funding our schools.
All right, so the big question is, and this is not the best question, but I'm going to ask it very directly, and then we'll fine-tune it. What happened? How does teacher salary end up in the bottom again? Because I think most listeners want that question addressed. Jacqueline?
Well, there's several things that probably contribute to that, and one of them is that our increase is based on the CPI, or the Consumer Price Index, and in order to maintain or keep going forward, we have to keep the percentage up. And there were a couple of years right after the teacher package went into effect that money was not available. And so that percentage was lower. We also keep in mind that what we're looking at, the average teacher salaries, that's probably based on the NEA rankings that come out. And that is the last one that came out was 2019 and 2020. And that was right after they did not fund, say, at a 3%. Or it was, I think, in 2017, we had a 30% and a 1.7%. Or 1%. So that drops that down. And that's where it had changed. Now, the last couple of years, that has increased. So I would say that as we look at the next couple ones that are coming out from the NEA rankings, that those will show us moving up. The hard part is that other states also are increasing the percentage. And so once you're at that bottom, it's very difficult to catch up. And when I looked at the 2019-2020, the next ranking, ranked 49, that was Florida, there was $118 difference between those average salaries. So it's not a great amount, but it moves you down to the next rank. So I think that as we look at on this last ranking of 1920, Montana, which is 40th, which is contiguous to South Dakota, connected on, as we look at those surrounding states, they're about $3,000 difference in in that. So we have a ways to go. I think it's going to be never ending that we're going to be fighting this, but I think that we need to keep up that inflationary rate for the teachers. Otherwise, it just continues to drop.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dan.
You know, I think a couple of things. One thing we put into the law was that every 3 years there would be a review of this compensation, a compensation review board, and they are due to meet now this year again. So 3 years ago, we could already see, I was on that comp review board, and we could see that, you know, now we're sixth again amongst our, if you look at economic development tax calculator, we're sixth among seven states in increasing our adjustment, and we could see we're losing ground, but yet at that time didn't feel we needed to make a very bold decision on moving forward. However, in our recommendation, it was stay the course, continue to fund general education at 3% or the rate of inflation, whichever is less, stay committed to that piece of our statute, but also over time to continue to move forward to increase another $4,500 for the average teacher salary. And that is something that has not happened. And so I think one of the things with the Blue Ribbon, because it was such a lift and it was such a reset of education, that, you know, it's kind of the thought is, well, wow, you know, there's a lot of obligations in the state and what we need to pay for. So you say, okay, maybe it needs to go to mental health. Maybe it needs to go to, you know, agricultural something. And so the problem is then with this big lift, it's like, whew, got that done. Mm-hmm. Whereas when we submitted our report, we said, this is just really a beginning. This is not an ending. This is something where we could see that we were dropping on the general fund obligation to education over time. And that local effort has to be more of a percentage of how it's funded, because it's a combination of local effort through levy. And the levies are different based on owner-occupied or ag or commercial levy, and in relationship to then what is appropriated just through the general fund. So this is an ongoing conversation, and it's really about, you know, our commitment to really think about funding and innovating in a new way.
Yeah. Ongoing conversation for us, too. We're going to wrap up for today, but my last question here is, how did the pandemic, because when you talked about the e-learning center, I thought, well, that was a good idea that we just found out, or you talked about recruiting and retaining teachers. We see from everything from political conversations about teachers and what they're teaching to just what they went through during the pandemic and the heroics, you know, that we covered for a whole year through our education reporter, Jackie Hendry, of, you know, teachers going to kids' houses with backpacks. So we value them more than ever. The spotlight is on them, ever increasing. What's next? How has the pandemic changed this conversation as the fundamental legislative statute work needs to be, that focus needs to be maintained? Anything bigger that you want to close with? Jacqueline, I'll start with you.
Sure. I think that is true, that these last year and a half, it's just unprecedented. And I think we need to continue to ride this through, continue those checks and balances. Like Deb said, they have the compensation review. They also have the school finance accountability board to make sure that those dollars are going to teacher salaries as we go through that. The mentoring program that was put in place is huge for beginning teachers coming in. And as they are facing this world that they had no idea that they were going to be thrown into, that mentoring becomes even more important. And that has increased greatly these last, since the Blue Ribbon went into effect. It started out, I think, in 16-17, there were 180 first and second year teachers. And in 1920, there were 514 that were being mentored. So that has been, you know, if I were a new teacher going to that, it's like, thank you for someone who has been doing it. Also, the course through the e-learning. The other part is a national board certification that has gone through. And I think continuing that to pay those teachers that are going and counselors who are going through that. Those are things that we really aren't talked about so much in this whole teacher compensation Blue Ribbon, but those behind the scene things that are happening as supports for people in the classroom is having a huge effect. And I think we need to ride it through and try to get on stable ground again.
Yeah, that recruitment and retention. Deb finishes us off, please.
Well, I think we just are at a historic moment. Yeah. I think the pandemic really showed us something interesting that is possible. And one of the things that we talked about in innovation, if you want to keep our small school districts going, we have to innovate with technology like no one else. And right now we have a historic funding time through the Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief, or ESSER fund, that came in the first round in South Dakota. We got $41 million. The second round, we had $170 million. And the third round is $382 million. Now, that money cannot go into the base of how we do our general education funding because it's not an ongoing stream of revenue. But what that revenue does, and in the provisions, of course, it's keeping our schools safe and, you know, getting classroom back open, but it's also about addressing academic, social, emotional, and mental health needs. Now more than ever, we could create the Innovation Center, where we have cost-effective virtual centers that provide all kinds of support from the administrative level to food service to business officers to the infrastructure, the hub, the standards that have to be set, the reports that have to be made federally, that there could be experts within a virtual hub, and that we have created ways to provide the best of the best, the benchmark learning to any student in South Dakota. Just because you live in a small town doesn't mean you'll get AP Physics. And so instead of this innovation and virtual learning as a last ditch, the pandemic has taught us it can be a budgeted way of being, and that we have to totally flip it on its head if we want to continue to have multiple school districts to serve our rural needs. It's an exciting time.
Yeah. We will continue these education conversations in the days ahead, and we hope that you'll continue to be part of them. Jacqueline Sly joined us from the SDPB studios in Rapid City. Thanks, Jackie.